Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam chato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, Chapter entitled Birth of Emperor Parikshit, Text Number 33. Tad api pretam alaksha. Bratarochyuta chodita tanam prahinam ajahur adityam dishi burisha tad api pretam alaksha Bratarochyuta chodita danam prahinam ajaru udichyam dishi burisha tad api pretam alaksha Rataro chuta chodita tanam prahinam ajaru tat his api pretam wishes of the mind alaksha observing bratara his brothers, Achyuta, the infallible Lord Sri Krishna, Chodita, being advised by, Tanam, riches, Prahinam, to collect, Ajaru, brought about, Udicham, northern. Dishi, direction. Burishaha, sufficient. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord, Krishna collected sufficient riches from the north left by King Maruta. Translation responsibly. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king. His brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north left by King Maruta. Purport. Maharaj Maruta, one of the great emperors of the world. He reigned over the world long before the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira. He was the son of Maharaj Avikshit and was a great devotee of the sun god known as Yamaraj. His brother Samvarta was a rival priest of the great Brihaspati, the learned priest of the demigods. He conducted one sacrifice called Sankara Jagya, by which the Lord was so satisfied that he was pleased to hand over to him the charge of a mountain peak of gold. This peak of gold is somewhere in the Himalaya mountains, and modern adventurers may try to find it there. He was so powerful an emperor that at the day's end of sacrifice, the demigods from the other planets like Indra, Chandra, Brihaspati, used to visit his palace. And because he had the gold peak at his disposal, he had sufficient gold in his possession. The canopy of the sacrificial altar was completely made of gold. In his daily performances of the sacrificial ceremonies, some of the inhabitants of the Vayuloka, airy planets, were invited to expedite the cooking work of the ceremony. And the assembly of the demigods in the ceremony was led by Vishwadeva. By his constant pious work, he was able to drive out all kinds of diseases from the jurisdiction of his kingdom. All the inhabitants of higher planets like Devaloka and Pitriloka were pleased with him for his great sacrificial ceremonies. Every day he used to give in charity to the learned Brahmanas such things as beddings, seats, conveyances, and sufficient quantities of gold. Because of munificent charities and performances of innumerable sacrifices, the King of Heaven, Indradev, was fully satisfied with him and always wished for his welfare. Due to his pious activities, he remained a young man throughout his life and reigned over the world for 1,000 years. Surrounded by his satisfied subjects, ministers, legitimate wife, sons and brothers. Even Lord Sri Krishna praised his spirit of pious activities. He handed over his only daughter to Maharishi Angira. And by his good blessings, he was elevated to the kingdom of heaven. First of all, he wanted to offer the priesthood of his sacrifices to learned Brihaspati. But the demigod refused to accept the post because of the king's being a human being, a man of this earth. He was very sorry for this, but on the advice of Narada Muni, he appointed Sambharata to the post, and he was successful in his mission. The success of a particular type of sacrifice completely depends on the priest in charge. In this age, all kinds of sacrifice are forbidden because there is no learned priest amongst the so-called Brahmanas, who go by the false notion of becoming sons of Brahmanas without Brahminical qualifications. In this age of Kali, therefore, only one kind of sacrifice is recommended, Sankirtan Yajna, as inaugurated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Omagyan Timbadandasya Gununjana Shalakaya Chakshun Yalitamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Pancha Kalpatu Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Vivacha Petitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Rasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Vrinda Hare Hare. So understanding that Parikshit is born, Yudhishthira wants to invoke auspiciousness. So that is the, you could say like the beauty of the Vedic culture, is that whenever there is a important event in one's life, there is a samskara to mark that event. The word samskara means impression. So it leaves an impression on our consciousness. So whenever there is an important event, then we hold a samskara. You just like you see in India, whenever someone gets married, there is a samskara, there's a wedding ceremony. And then you see in the old days, the wedding used to go for 3 days, or 7 days. Or I don't know what the longest is. But it goes for a very long time. Why? Because it leaves an impression on your consciousness that this is important. All of this ceremony, all these samskaras, all these rituals, it means that this is an important event in your life. So just like for the devotees, when we take initiation from a guru, then we have a yajna, Actually, in the Gaudiya tradition, it is not necessary to have a yajna. We do it because it makes it ceremonial, but actually it's not necessary. You see, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he initiated Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, there was no yajna. Right? He just gave the name. You are Rupa Goswami. You are Sanatan Goswami. Like that. So in our tradition, it is not necessary that there is a yajna. But still, we do the yajna, and Prabhupada would do the yajna because it makes the event auspicious and it makes the event important and it leaves an impression on the consciousness of the devotee. This is the idea. That's why we have samskaras. They leave an impression on our consciousness. This is an important event. You are doing this activity now, you're taking vows in front of the guru. You're taking vows in front of the sacred fire, which Krishna himself has entered. Right? You're taking vows in front of the deities. You're taking vows in front of Tulsi Devi. You're taking vows in front of the Vaishnavas. And this is important. So that is why we do the yajna, you know, because it leaves an impression on the consciousness that this is a very important moment. And you are taking vows. Vows are very important. To advance in spiritual life, you have to take vows. In Kali Yuga, it's very difficult to keep vows. You see, in the previous days, if people made vows, that was it. Have you seen the Mahabharata? If vows were taken, right, there was no turning back on those vows. You see that Karna, he took a vow that he would always be loyal to Duryodhana. But before the battle, Krishna came to him, and they were on a chariot together, and they were riding through the city of Hastinapur. And then Krishna said to Karna, he said, actually, the Pandavas are your brothers. And if at this moment, if you come to their side, right, and accept that they are your brothers, Yudhishthira will stand behind you and hold the white umbrella above your head. Arjuna and Bhima will stand on either side of you and wave you with a chamara. Nakula and Sahadeva will carry your slippers, your chapel. Right? They will be completely loyal to you. Everything which is there in the past, everything will be forgotten. They will be completely loyal. And you will become the emperor of the earth. Right? But because he had taken a vow that he would not become disloyal to Duryodhana, he would not abandon Duryodhana because a vow was taken. Just like you see again, when before the battle took place, Karna was performing tapasya, austerity. So he was performing his austerity and he was worshipping Surya. Surya is his father, the sun god. We get power from Suryadev. Suryadev is the giver of life, energy, power in the whole universe. All the energy of the universe comes from Surya. Surya is a partial expansion of Krishna. He's a partial incarnation of God himself, the sun god, Surya Narayan. Right? So he was worshipping Suryadev and meditating upon Surya, and Indra, who is the father of Arjuna, who is the enemy of Karna, he wanted to take some of the power away from Karna. So he came to him disguised as a Brahmana. So Indra said to Karna, he said, I want to beg charity from you. And a Kshatriya will always give charity to a Brahmana. That is his vow. He will always give whatever the Brahmana asks for. So he said, Indra was disguised as a Brahmana. He said, what is it that you want? What do you desire? I will give you anything you want. He said, you give me your kavach. You give me your armor. Karna was born with armor embedded into his body. Right? His body, it was attached to his body, and he had beautiful earrings which were attached to his body. That's why he was called Karna. Karna means ear, like that. So Karna, beautiful earrings which were attached to his body, and armor which was attached to his body. He was the son of the sun god himself. He was practically a demigod. Now, all the Pandavas were practically demigods. So powerful. But when he was asked by the Brahmana, who was Indra in disguise, "Give me your kavach," immediately he took his sword and he cut from his body, removed it from his body, and gave it to him like that. This is Vedic culture. When you take vows, you cannot go back. This is not effective in Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, we can't even keep promises. "I promise you I'll be there. I promise I'll do this for you." In Kali Yuga, don't say promise so much. Rupa Goswami actually says, don't go before the deities and promise them things. Unless you're very, very sure you're going to do it. Like that. Don't go before the deities and say, "I will do this." Because maybe the deities don't want that done anyway. You go to the deities and say, "I will do this." Like that. Or maybe Krishna looks at you and he says, "I don't want that. I've got a totally different idea." Like that. So you have to be very careful. And particularly, you have to be very careful of taking vows in front of the deities. So initiation is very, very serious. And devotees have to take it very seriously, because it's not easy to keep those vows for your whole life. 16 rounds every day. 4 regulative principles all your life, for your whole life. It's not easy to do that. These are very powerful vows. A big thing in Kali Yuga. Harisori Prabhu travelled with Prabhupada for 18 months, and he said that, because Prabhupada would regularly do initiations, yajñas, and he said that whenever Prabhupada would do a yajña, the next day he would get sick. Whenever Prabhupada did a yajña, the next day he would get sick. And actually in 77, Prabhupada said no more disciples. He said this several times actually. There was one time in 75 or 76 where he got quite sick and he said no more initiations. He said that. He didn't initiate for about 3 months. And then in 77, he said no more. And in about May, I think it was, he said no more. He said that's it. No more initiations. And that's when he set up his system. And he said that 11 of my disciples will initiate on my behalf and the devotees will still be my disciples. But he said to them, he said, "But you will take the karma." He said that. Prabhupada said that to him. He said, "You will take the karma." He said, "If you're doing this, understand it." Right? It doesn't mean you get all the karma. You know, if we got if the guru got all the karma of the disciple, the guru would be finished. You know, one disciple is enough to wipe out. Very, very powerful. Just like His Holiness Jayapataka Swami, you know. I mean, look at Jayapataka Swami. You know, now he is physically incapacitated and still he is travelling the world initiating hundreds and thousands of disciples. Prabhupada actually said to him he should have 10,000 disciples. Prabhupada gave him that instruction. He gave instruction to all of his GBC actually. In Mayapur one time, he said, "You should all have 10,000 disciples." So Jayapataka Swami, still he is doing it. So at one time he was in Mayapur and he initiated 100 or 200 devotees in one yajña. Pious Bengali devotees. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there. And he said, "If I initiated that many people in the West," he said, "I would need a stretcher." He said, "After the yajña, you'd have to take me out on a stretcher." You know, if I initiated 100 or 200 Westerners at one time, he said, "You'd have to carry me off." You know. So it's not that the guru takes all of the karma from the disciple, but Prabhupada describes it as a transparent via medium. So just like there was a tunnel, the karma actually goes to Krishna. Moksha yashami masucha. Krishna says, "I will destroy it. Sarva papebhyo. All of it, I will destroy it." But because the guru is the vessel, or the via media, it travels through him to Krishna, then something happens. He has to take some... it affects him. It's just like if you take something impure, someone passes it to you, okay, you pass it on, then you clean yourself, but still you've touched it. So there may be some contamination. So the guru, because he's passing us on to Krishna, he's recommending us to Krishna, then some karma is there. Actually, when Mahaprabhu, when he liberated Jagai and Madhai, he embraced them And when he embraced them, his body turned black. Right? All the sin from Jagai Madai came into Mahaprabhu's form. And Advaita Acharya said, he looks like Krishna. Just for a moment, his body went black, absorbing all the sin. And then it was gone. And Mahaprabhu was golden again. So only Krishna can destroy the karma. But the guru, it has to come through him. So it is very important. So devotees, you have to be very serious. You have to be very sure. If you are taking vows, right, of initiation, you have to be very sure that that is what you want. Otherwise, it can cause the guru problems. Like that. And the guru is very merciful. One of the spiritual masters, he told me, he said that when I initiate devotees, he said, many times I know they're not going to follow everything. He says, I know they can't follow everything. So it's very serious. So the guru is taking a great risk, actually. He's doing a great service. He's being very compassionate towards the devotees on behalf of Krishna. That is his service. Prabhupada was like that. He was very compassionate. In the beginning, he was very magnanimous and very liberal about who he would initiate. Prabhupada would come to a temple. He came to Sydney in 71, 72, 73, like that. And to Australia. When he came, Prabhupada just said, okay, whoever's in the temple, they'll be initiated tomorrow. Prabhupada said that. Whoever's in the temple, right? Some devotees have been in the temple 2 weeks. Prabhupada said, okay, they'll be initiated tomorrow. Tell them all to get ready. Tomorrow they'll be initiated. Some people had only been in the temple 1 or 2 days. Right? And Prabhupada said, they'll be initiated tomorrow. But Prabhupada didn't keep being like that as the years went by, 75, 76, 77, it became more strict. And now it is more strict. Just like His Holiness Radhanath Swami is about to do an initiation, it appears, very soon. Some of the devotees will be initiated by him here in Melbourne also. So, but he hasn't initiated for a while now, isn't it? Is it 1 or 2 years or something? 2 years. Right? He hasn't done any yajnas for 2 years. And he's initiating, it could be, I don't know how many, is it 1 or 2,000 people are waiting or something? Or, do you know how many? No, but it's a lot. It's at least 800 or something. It could be more, it could be 1 or 2,000 people. They're waiting to be initiated. And one of the devotees said to Maharaj, you know, Maharaj, you know, you're initiating so many devotees and like that. And Maharaj said, well, I keep raising the bar. I keep saying, okay, if you want to be initiated, it keeps making it stricter and stricter and stricter and harder and higher levels. So you can be initiated. And he said, they just keep coming up to the level. So I have to initiate them. And then, you know, and then he goes higher and then they have to be initiated again. So the point is that the guru has to be very careful. And the disciple has to be very serious. You have to know this is what you want. It's not easy to do it for your whole life. So you have to be very careful about taking vows in Kali Yuga. Right? You have to be very careful. Don't say, I will do it, or I vow to do it, unless you are very serious. Because in the previous ages, people were very powerful. In Kali Yuga, people find it very difficult. They struggle a lot in Kali Yuga to maintain spiritual life. It's hard for people to maintain spiritual life. So better that if you cannot keep to your vows, then better to just wait. Be patient. There's no rush. Prabhupada waited 12 years to become initiated. Right. He didn't just jump into initiated. He waited 12 years. That's significant that Prabhupada waited that long. Right, because Prabhupada's teaching us, you have to be very, very definite, very careful. It's serious business in Kali Yuga, these things. So, the reason we have samskaras is because it creates an impression on the consciousness. So, Yudhishthira, he is about to perform a yajna to create auspiciousness for the new member of the dynasty. Who is the new member of the dynasty? Parikshit. Right, the grandson is there. So now let's have a yajna to create auspiciousness. So then what does he do? He says to the brothers, okay, go north. Go to the Himalayas. There is a mountain of gold there. Find it and bring the gold for the yajna. We need as much gold as we can get. So the four gods, right, Bhima, Arjun, Nakul, Sahadeva, they travel. Right. When those four go anywhere, then that's it. Whatever they want, they bring it back for Yudhishthira. They're so powerful. When he did other yajnas, Rajasuya, Ashwamedha, when he would do other yoga, he did Ashwamedha. When he did Ashwamedha, he sent them in four directions. Right? He said, you go north, you go east, you go west, you go south. Right? So if you go out east of India, right, you go to Burma, right, then you go down Thailand, Cambodia, you go down Indonesia, and you go down to Bali, and then you get to Australia. Australia. So what is Australia? And Prabhupada was flying over from Perth to Sydney or Melbourne, and Prabhupada looked out the window, and when you look out, you just see desert, right? And Prabhupada said, Australia, Himalaya, right? Astra. Astra means weapons. Prabhupada said to Hari Saurabhu, the Kshatriyas used to come here and fire the weapons, the Brahmastras and those other practice. Australia, Australia was the place of practicing the weapons. That's why the whole country is desert. It used to be a nice place here until the Indians came. We used to have a nice country, and then the Indians came, and then everything just began. So now you have to come all the way to the East Coast just to get some nice green places. Yeah. But previously, it was a very nice country. Like that. It's actually a country of great wealth. Australia, even to this day, is the greatest producer of gold on the planet. Most gold comes from Australia. Just up in near the Grampians, there's a very affluent gold mine. They're taking a lot of gold. Now, just here in Victoria, a lot of gold is coming out. In Queensland, New South Wales, a lot of gold, even to this day. So it was known that this country was a country of great wealth and opulence. It's always been said like that. They used to come and get wealth from this place. So when Yudhishthira, he ordered the Pandavas to go east, I can't remember who it was. It was either Arjuna or Bhima, one of the two. They went to the east. So they travelled all the way down through Southeast Asia. And about 70 years ago in Cambodia, the French scientists, the French archaeologists, they discovered a place called Angkor Wat in the jungle, like a huge temple in the jungle. And when they discovered it, they thought it was a Buddhist shrine. But when they studied it very carefully, it was depicted on the bas relief around the edges of the temple, the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. There are many descriptions of these pastimes on the temple. So they understood it was a Hindu temple. And it's the biggest Hindu monument on the earth. It's not in India. So how did that get there? How did Hinduism, which is no longer there in that part of the world, how did that get there? If you go to Bali, which is just above Australia, which if you travel down through Southeast Asia and then through Indonesia, and then right at the end, then there's Bali, right, which is disconnected from Indonesia. If you travel right down, if you go to Bali and you get off the plane at the airport and you go out, right, on the traffic island outside the airport, there is a huge 20-foot high Krishna and Arjuna Parthasarathi statue. And people in Bali are Hindus generally. Right, that's the prominent religion. Right? But if you go across to Indonesia, which is just next door, separated by the sea, the prominent religion is Islam. Right? It's the second biggest Islamic country in the world, I think. Like that. It's a huge Islamic country, Indonesia. But Bali is still mainly Hindu. And no one from Bali has been to India. None of the natives have ever been to India. But still it's the same religion as there. So how did that happen? Right? Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains in the beginning of the Chaitanya Bhagavat that during the time that the Pandavas were on the planet, they spread Hindu Dharma. Sorry, I have to correct that. Sanatan Dharma all over the planet. Right? It was by their influence, those four brothers and Yudhishthira, those five brothers, that Sanatan Dharma, Vedic culture, spread everywhere. So that's why you see, even to this day in Bali, they're still practicing something. There is some Vedic culture still being practiced. So here, for this particular yajna, then Yudhishthira says to the brothers, he said, go north, find this mountain of gold and bring it back. And bring back as much gold as you can. So they've done that. They've gone up north, where they found the mountain of gold, and Prabhupada says it is still there. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada says, he says, this peak of gold is somewhere in the Himalayan mountains, and modern adventurers may try to find it there. So it is still there. The gold is still there. Most likely it's under the snow, so you can't see it. But it's there. There's still a peak of gold, basically a mountain which is full of gold, like that. So it can be, if someone can find it, it would solve a lot of problems in ISKCON. If someone can make it their service to go up there and find it, we wouldn't have any more problems. Then the whole Chandogya Mandir, because at the moment we're building the biggest Hindu temple on the earth in Mayapur, right? The biggest Hindu temple on the earth. And it was going to be gold-plated, the whole dome, which was going to cost... can't remember what the figure was. It was at least $10 million US to gold-plate the dome. But they're not going to gold-plate it now. They're going to... it's a different... it's like a bluish kind of colour. There'll be a lot of gold plate on it, but it won't be fully... but they were going to gold... it might have been $60 million, I can't remember. It was the whole thing. They were going to gold-plate the whole thing. But they're not now. But if we find this mountain of gold, then no problem. We can gold plate it. So it is still there. And Srila Prabhupada has said that in terms of performing yajñas, this particular king who lived in the north, up in the Himalayas, he was a great king, Maruta. Maruta had very powerful priests to perform his yajñas. It was interesting because I remember when my spiritual master, when he used to do initiations, I remember I was there for a number of initiations, he was very particular about who the Purohit was, who the priest or the brahmana who was actually doing the yajña. He was very particular. I remember even in some yajñas he would remove the person. Like if someone was sitting there doing it and he would look and then he would see someone else in the audience who he felt was more qualified, he would say they will be the Purohit. I saw him actually change. In the middle, like before the yajña, he'd walk in, everything was set up, and the brahmana was sitting there and he'd say, no, this person. He was very particular about who would do it. I remember one time he got one of his godbrothers, Brihaspati. Bhrigupati Prabhu. You might know Bhrigupati Prabhu. He's in Los Angeles. Even to this day, he's one of the biggest book distributors in ISKCON. He's been distributing books for 40 years. One of the biggest books. He's still going, 60 years old. Carries a huge backpack on his back into the LAX terminal every day. Distributes so many books. I used to go on book distribution with him years ago. Very powerful devotee. So I remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said, you will be the Purohit. When I do this yajña, I want you to be the brahmana. So very particular who does the yajña. Very particular who offers the bhoga to the deities. Very particular who offers the aarti to the deities. Very particular who is cooking for the deities. Very particular who is cooking for the devotees. Right? Very particular who dresses the deities. You have to be qualified. This is the point. Right? Marut was very particular. Right? He wanted Brihaspati. Now, Brihaspati is the head priest of the demigods, of the devatas. His planet is Jupiter. If you get up in the morning, at the moment about 5 in the morning, if you look out, I'm just trying to think, it would be out there in that direction. If you look out northeast at the moment, you'll see Jupiter at the moment, like that, just rising. Then later on in the morning, you'll see, just before the sunrise, you'll see Venus. Jupiter's probably about there and Venus is probably about there. So Jupiter is the planet of Brihaspati and Venus is the planet of Shukracharya, who is the priest of the Asuras. So he's a very powerful priest and a very powerful priest of the demigods. That is their planets. That's why in Vedic astrology, Venus and Jupiter are the two most auspicious planets, because they give the most benediction. Because Brihaspati, he's the ruler of one of them, and Shukracharya is the ruler of the other. So he wanted Brihaspati to be his priest, but he could not do it. He said, I will not do it because you're a human being, so I won't come to earth, I won't do that. But then he was very particular about who did become the priest. So he got a very very qualified person, Samvarta. So when we are doing any of the services in the temple, particularly when it comes to getting second initiation, right, the person must become very qualified. Prabhupada actually stated this. He said, first initiation can be given easily. Right? But second initiation, the standard must be much higher. I know for myself, my guru gave me first initiation, and then next year when he came, a year later, most of the gurus were just giving initiation a year later. That most gurus do that. Not all gurus, but many gurus do like that. But then he came, and then he said, no, I'm not going to give it to you this year. Next year. And then he came next year, and he said, I'm not going to give it to you this year. Next year. And then he came next year, and then he gave it to me. But by that time, I was more humble then. I was feeling like now I'm not so qualified. If he gives it to me or not, it doesn't matter because I'm not so qualified. First year, I was thinking, yes, I should become a Brahmana. I want to be on the altar. I want to worship the deities. He said, you're not qualified to worship the deities. Second year, he came back and said, you're still not qualified to worship the deities. Third year, okay, he said, okay, now you can do it. Like that. So, second initiation, Prabhupada was much more strict. And when Prabhupada was here, 1974, I think, or 75, then Balaram Prabhu, who was the previous temple president, Aniruddha Prabhu, he said to Prabhupada, what is the qualification for someone to become a Brahmana? Prabhupada said they must be steady in their service. Because Brahmanas have to be steady. Right? You have to be there for the deities every day. You have to be there on time to do your service. Right? Regularly, steady. You can't be ringing up all the time, oh, I don't feel well. Oh, I've got a headache. Oh, I don't feel like doing it. Oh, I forgot I have to pick up my kids. You know, like this. If you're doing Brahminical service, you have to be steady. Therefore, the qualification to become a second initiated devotee in ISKCON is much higher. And the devotees must be qualified if they're going to worship the deities. So what did Prabhupada say were the two main qualifications to become a Brahmana? Or what did he say the two most important features of deity worship? Yeah, cleanliness and punctuality. You have to learn what is cleanliness. A lot of devotees don't know what is cleanliness. They do all sorts of things. You listen to Hari Sori Prabhu's lectures about Prabhupada on cleanliness, right? Like Prabhupada, they serve Prabhupada lunch, and then afterwards Hari Sori Prabhu was taking lunch with some other devotees. And then Prabhupada walked through, so they all offered their obeisances, and then they got up. And then Hari Sori Prabhu put his hands like this, like on his knees, like this. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, he said, malecha. You know, eat and then put your hands all over yourself. Malecha. He's just going like this while he's eating. You know, and then Prabhupada said, malecha. And what is this? Another time, then Hari Sori Prabhu just joined Prabhupada's party, had only just joined, and Prabhupada had a bowl of salt on the table, and Prabhupada was taking some of the salt while he was eating and putting it like that, right? So Prabhupada explained that uncleanliness travels like electricity, right? If this is electric, right? So that runs through there, actually it doesn't, but in the old days when the world was civilized, right? Then it ran through there, connected, right? Electricity. Or we have the power plant in Gippsland. So electricity runs from there all the way. It travels, right? So Prabhupada said when something is unclean, everything is unclean, right? It means if you're touching that salt and putting it like that on the meal, then that salt is now contaminated. It's considered unclean. So Hari Sori was a new devotee, and he was just serving Prabhupada, and he thought, well, Prabhupada's a pure devotee. You know, Krishna's God, he's the pure devotee, everything he touches is completely pure. So when he came in to clean everything up, then he picked up something which was clean, which was somewhere near the table, which was clean, and in the other hand he picked up the salt. And Prabhupada said, malecha. So what are you doing? One thing is clean, one thing is unclean, you're touching at the same time. Now everything is contaminated. You touch that is unclean. Now you are contaminated. You touch that suchi thing, that clean thing, now that is contaminated. So devotees, you have to learn these things. You want to be a Brahmana, you have to learn what is cleanliness. My spiritual master was very particular about this, very particular. I remember I wanted a Brahmana initiation that first year when he came back. It wasn't so much that I wanted it, but I just thought that was the system because I'd seen other gurus doing that. You know, they initiate and then next year they get Brahman. So I just thought that was the system. So I wasn't pushing for it so much, but I just thought that was the system. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj came and Aniruddha Prabhu said, Keshava, we're recommending him for Brahman initiation. You know, 1 year after I took first initiation. And he looked at me and he said, if he is qualified. But I could see his mood was not, he was not into it. So then, after Mangalarti, the next day, we're walking back upstairs. He was going upstairs to chant his japa. And he said, get me a plate to put Tulsi on. Because he was chanting his japa upstairs with Tulsi, like that. So then I went to the dining room. I was a new devotee, so I went to the dining room, got a plate, you know, like a crockery plate from the cupboard, took it upstairs. He said, what do they use that plate for? And, you know, I was you know, Bhakta, you know. Yeah, I said, oh, eating off Srila Gurudev. And he said, so you're going to put Tulsi on a contaminated plate. He said, get out of here. He said, you're not qualified to be a Brahmin. It was true. I didn't know the standards. So then I go onto the altar. You think you're clean worshipping Radha Bhattava. Half the time you go on the altar, you may not be clean. You have to be trained. You have to learn what is cleanliness. Right? Devotees need these things. I have a seminar on cleanliness, actually. We should do that. I've done it regularly in the past. We should do it again if we can organise it somehow. Hands up who would like to do a seminar on cleanliness. Hands up who's available on a Tuesday night. Hands up a Tuesday night, you can come. Most can come. Okay. Maybe the first Tuesday in Kartik. I'll try to organise. We'll do a seminar on cleanliness if I can do it. I'll try to organise it like that. It's very, very good to learn these things. Because many devotees, we don't actually understand what is cleanliness, but it's very important you understand these things. That's why Prabhupada was particular about people going to worship the deities. And then the second point is punctuality. Punctuality means on time. Prabhupada was standing in front of the deities in Krishna Balaram Mandir, 1975. The temple was just new. And Prabhupada was there waiting to greet the deities at 7 o'clock or 7:15, whatever time that it is. And the devotees came out, blew the conch, and then opened the curtains, and they were 1 minute late. Prabhupada was standing there looking at his watch, and he turned around to the other devotees and said, it's very hard to be a Brahmana in Kali Yuga. The devotees are 1 minute late. Prabhupada said, very hard to be a Brahmana in Kali Yuga, to be on time. Right. Prabhupada used to be up in the middle of the night translating his books, and Prabhupada insisted in the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan that the bell was rung every hour. Right? And even to this day, if you're in Vrindavan, right, and you hear the temple, 1 o'clock in the morning, doom, 2 o'clock in the morning, doom, doom, 3 o'clock in the morning, doom, 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 on the hour. Prabhupada was insistent that had to be maintained. It's been maintained like that. So sometimes it wasn't rung on the hour because the guard was asleep. Sometimes it wasn't rung on time. Prabhupada would be doing his translation work. Prabhupada would ring his bell, wake up his servant. Servant would come in. Prabhupada said, why they have not rung the bell on time? No, run outside, go and find the guard, wake up the guard. Hey, you're on time, Baba. You know, and then back, and then Prabhupada, okay, and then Prabhupada said, take rest. That was Prabhupada. One time, this has got nothing to do with what we're talking about, one time, very far out, past night, that Prabhupada, he rang his bell like 1 o'clock in the morning, right? And then one of the devotees, I think it was Satsarupa Maharaj, someone came in, rings the bell at 1 in the morning, and he said to the devotee, he says, where is Guru Kripa Swami? Where is Guru Kripa Swami? And the devotee said, he's taking rest, Prabhupada. Go and get him. So they went and found Guru, knocked on the door. You know, Guru Kripa Maharaj woke up, you know, like that. Prabhupada wants to see you now. Okay, so he came in, you know, just runs in like that. And then Prabhupada just translating behind the desk. He came in, offers his obeisance, sits there. And Prabhupada just translating. Prabhupada just kept translating like that. And after a few minutes, Guru Kripa Swami said, Prabhupada, you called me? You wanted to see me? Prabhupada said, he stopped, he looked in, he said, what were you doing? And he just said, I was sleeping, Prabhupada. Why are you sleeping? Right? Because, Prabhupada, I need to take rest so I can do my service. Why are you taking so much rest? I am awake. I am translating Bhagavatam. And he just looked at him. Prabhupada, you're a Paramahamsa. Why you are not a Paramahamsa? Then Guru Kripa Maharaj just looked at Prabhupada. He said, go and take rest. So he just left, went and took rest, and Prabhupada just kept translating Bhagavatam. That's Prabhupada. Prabhupada was on another level, you know. Yeah. Prabhupada was in the train, sometimes travelling through India. Tomorrow Krishna Maharaj would be with him in the carriage, taking rest. And then he'd wake up, go to bed about 10 o'clock. Prabhupada would wake up at 12 o'clock and then start doing his service, translating or whatever. And then tomorrow Krishna Maharaj, sometimes he'd wake up in the middle of the night, he'd see Prabhupada was awake, so he'd get out of his sleeping bag and offer obeisances and stand up. Prabhupada would say, just take rest. You know, you cannot do what I am doing, just take rest. You can sleep 6 hours. I will sleep one or two. Like that. Prabhupada was on a different level. Like that. So the point is, there should be cleanliness, there should be punctuality. That is the qualification. So the guru, he will give first initiation more liberally, but second initiation must be given very carefully. Because the devotee must be qualified. Because you're serving Radha and Krishna. You're serving Gaur Nitai. You have to be qualified. You have to understand what is the situation. Then you can do that service. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we have discussed.
One comment for you. As you said, Ashwini Vedic in Mandela's day, you're aging now. And the Prime Minister is going to sign a deal to sell uranium to India, nuclear weapons.
They're not saying nuclear weapons, they're saying nuclear power.
Yeah.
Not weapons, but the danger is. Yeah. Prabhupada said cow dung is best. Prabhupada said that. He said, when you're cooking, he said, electricity is fourth class, gas is third class, wood, fire is second class, and cow dung is first class. Now we have uranium. not even on the list. Any other questions? I didn't get the last one.
What would be the result of creations of devotee if he can't?
If he doesn't chant 16 rounds.
I mean, anything.
Or if he doesn't. If he doesn't follow the four regulative principles, or if he doesn't chant 16 rounds, what is the reaction?
Yeah.
The reaction is he does not attain love of God. That's the reaction. You don't get love of God. If you're not following the four regulated principles and chanting 16 rounds, you will not get love of God. Srila Prabhupada said that if you follow the four regulated principles and chant 16 rounds attentively every day, he said, I will take you back to Godhead. So if you don't do it, then you will not get love of God. You'll just stay in this material world again. You'll be born again. Bahu jamma kaliyadi shravani. You'll just stay in the material world. And you'll just keep. So it's up to you. Any other question? Comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.